First of all, I just want to thank you for joining us. We have Alon Cohen with us here today to talk about Israeli entrepreneurship. Alon, if you would, I know you were talking a little bit with me before. Just explain to some of the people out there that are listening today the various businesses you oversee and you own. I know Elite Management in New York City is the primary one. If you would talk about that and maybe some other ventures that you've had in the past.
Well, my initial involvement in business in the United States emerged, right after my experience at Columbia University, where I studied for my master's degree. Although I went backwards forward to Israel, I realized that around Columbia University, and again, I'm referring to the late 60s, where I went to school, and then I came back here in 1973 to work for the government, and then when I decided to go on my own, I realized that on the Upper West Side of Manhattan was a wasteland as far as real estate was concerned, and that there was a shortage of apartments, but for a reason that a big part of the west part of Manhattan was sort of somewhat neglected, to say the least. So with very little money, my brother and I started buying some real estate in the west side of Manhattan. We didn't have much money, and not too many people were willing to lend us money to buy in those areas which we identified that will be potentially valuable. So with, again, very little money, we bought initially one building on the west side of Manhattan, and then when those were getting to be too expensive, we focused on an area called Washington Heights, where we picked up apartments really for very little. Landlords were just happy to get rid of them. The tenants were not too responsible, they were not paying, they were abusing the apartments. So we came in, rolled our sleeves, talked to the tenants, gave them services, and little by little gained their trust, and therefore, saw them assuming some responsibilities. We did not make much money. I mean, I had to have other jobs in order to sustain my real estate business. But ultimately it started paying off, and now it's a different story. That was one of my area of entrepreneurship, is the west side of Manhattan, buying real estate. In addition, I was not oblivious to the fact that women in the United States, I'm rather eclectic in terms of what I do, but I was not oblivious to the fact that American women have fetish with shoes, so not that I had any experience. It's a lengthy story, but I got involved in producing ladies' shoes in the Orient and in the Philippines and then in Italy. And I was a major supplier to companies like initially people like Bloomingdale's as well as ultimately, people like DSW, etc.
Well, Alon, obviously, you said you were first came over to the States 1967, and it's been a while since you've been over here. Do you have any businesses or anything connected with Israel that you
In addition, we invested in Israel. We are partners. I mean, they're just investors in a large Israeli packaging company which does corrugated cardboard, special ticketing, various elements of packaging. Some of them are actually unique in the world, but I'm only an investor. I'm not involved in it.
Gotcha.
We developed an area of packaging. Certain, for instance, we have various envelopes that are being produced by us that are used by various parts of the world as forms of transforming documents or money, and once they are locked or closed, these envelopes, that it's traceable if anybody tries to open them. So, you know, things like that. But I'm not directly involved in it, just an investor in it.
So obviously, you know, being an entrepreneur, that is something, a role you've grown into and you've mastered, I'd say, at this point in your life. What is the best part about owning your own business, being your own boss, and on the reverse side, the worst part?
You know, you're independent. You're responsible for yourself. You're responsible for your mistakes. You're responsible for your successes. You need a little bit of courage. And I really enjoyed the creative end of it. The creative end of it, both in terms of overcoming the financial, you know, being creative in overcoming the financial difficulties and getting some funds to buy the real estate initially. And in my shoe business, my theme was not to copy anybody, but to create my own ideas, for better or for worse. And ultimately, I developed trust in the industry.
So, obviously, you learned your sort of entrepreneurial spirit somewhere, I would assume, you know, maybe back in Israel. Did you learn anything growing up, or you saw anything, a businessman, that you said, you know, I want to do this, you know, back in Israel?
No, not at all. I was intending to be, I was very much a student leader. I was actually the national vice president of the Israeli Union of Students. I was intending to be involved in possibly politics, civil servant, but, you know, I realized that I am not too good in being a part of it. You know, I'm not responding too good to decision-making as a group, but as an individual. So I decided to go on my own and be accountable to myself rather than to others. So, which I believe was a good decision for me. I'm very glad about that. And if I want to do some civil work, I do it as a volunteer now.
Well, you know, statistics show, I mean, that Israel is the nation with the world's most startups per capita. I mean, do you think that would surprise most people to hear, especially here in the States, that they wouldn't realize that?
No, because we had to improvise. We had to be, I had to improvise as a kid. I had to, you know, I was born before the state was born. My parents were working. I had to assume responsibility as a child. I had to assume the responsibility as a student at school. So, you know, we have learned in an early stage to assume responsibility for ourselves. And of course, in the army, You know, you're a commander in the field, you're responsible for people, you have to make decisions mean that life and death. So, I mean, experience is ultimately become meaningful later on in life.
What do you think makes Israelis so successful, not only at starting up, as we talked about, that you have to be resourceful, but that not only do they start it up, but they maintain it, and they don't just start it and let it go; they keep it going.
You know, a lot of businesses, you know, it needs some courage to get involved, and courage, you know, is very often in the face of dangers that one, you know, encounters, and you encounter danger and, you know, when you're 17 and a half, 18, you go to the army, you face danger. And maybe Israelis are more willing to take dangerous ventures. I mean, dangerous in terms of risking. Risking time, risking energy, risking funds in order to achieve their goals. So that might be something of the DNA. Although I must say, it was not a part of my generation, but that would contribute a big part of the success to the startup companies that the one refers to in Israel today. At one time, a government decision to have vocational schools in Israel, whereby a kid at the age of you know, when he goes to ninth grade and have skills in the area of agriculture, to study technology, to study electronics that allow you to do so. And then when you go to the army and they use those skills for in the military, then you end up having, you know, 4 years of studies, 3 years of experience. So at the age of 21, 22, you have 7 years of, you know, honing certain skills. And when you come out to the real world, people appreciate it, and it can be a tool, a source of success.
Interesting. So you feel, so really, not only the military, but the educational system sets them up. It's almost like a building process.
Well, that part of the education system, that I don't know in percentages how many people in Israel go to vocational schools. A lot of people just have general studies,
right?
And that's similar to the United States. But there are hundreds of vocational schools, as I said. There are schools to study agriculture. There are schools to study carpentry. You learn to be an electrician. And the army takes advantage of it. I mean, you have all these skills. They say, okay, fix a tank. Get on the computer. Find a way to, you know, use this model to apply to the way a cannon shoots. Use it in, you know, in the main headquarters. So now, between the 4 years at school and two, you know, if you have a specific skill, the military, after the regular service, sort of asks you to stay longer. So you stay another year, so you have, let's say, 3 or 4 years in the army, you have 4 years of studying it in high school, now you have 8 years and you're 22 years old. Plus, you know, at the age of 18, you say, okay, if you go to the army at 18, at 19, you already command over 4 or 5 people. When you're 20, you maybe command a group of 20 or 30 or 40. So you have also the leadership ability, you have the responsibility, you have the danger. So, I mean, all these elements, so courage that you need. So all these elements to get put together, I believe, directly or indirectly, help.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm noticing a theme in a lot of the people I interview. The one theme that comes back to why Israelis are so successful in business and entrepreneurship and really many aspects of life is, from what I'm understanding, a lot of people say, is because of the military and the experience they get there. So that is an interesting theme to keep track of and in mind of.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not that the army is such a great thing as far as it's concerned. But how many kids in America, if they want to be responsible at the age of 18, have the opportunity to do it? I mean, the only responsibility they have when they go to college is to get drunk or not to get drunk.
Right.
I'm being a little bit sarcastic about it, but the level of responsibility they have to assume is small compared to what the level of responsibility the young Israeli has.
Well, I think sarcastic, but also I think there's truth in your sarcasm. But because I've noticed that when I went over to Israel and Birthright in 2009, a lot of the Israelis, were sort of...
Yeah, you meet a kid who is 18 years old, and or 19 or 20 years old. He's learning to defend himself, to be responsible for others. You know, it's something that there's more people should be, maybe not even in a military sense, have the opportunity. Look, at one time America had the peace corps movement. Mm-hmm. I think that allowed people to be responsible, to go to other countries, to help other people. I think they came back more mature. It also quickens the maturity part of an individual. I think the peace, maybe they have now Teach for America. I think kids who go for Teach for America end up, in an accelerated maturity process.
No, those are all very good points. And I know we talked before we started the interview about the book Startup Nation by Dan Senor and Saul Singer. I'm assuming you've read it.
Yes.
What were your thoughts? I mean, did they basically say what you already knew, but now that the whole sort of world can know?
No, they put it in more specific, and they sort of brought in some very unbelievable examples, like the pill that I mentioned that, you know, has a camera that travels, you know, to detect if there's any colon cancer. And the origin of that pill with the camera started with an engineer who was involved in working on Israeli missiles with a camera. So they basically took a missile, you know, a guided missile with a camera. So, I mean, the whole idea is unbelievable. But the guy said, you know what, we did it with a missile. You know, we put a camera and we guide it. Hey, why don't we do it with a pill so we can see if somebody has colon cancer rather than have colonoscopy? I mean, or, you know, on the issue of changing batteries in a quick speed. I mean, they just applied what the Israeli airplanes are doing in attaching a missile to the wings of a plane to attaching quickly a battery to the back of a car. So it will have the appeal of, you know, having batteries instead of fuel. But on the road, you can do it without it taking a long time, which will be appealing to a potential customer of the new car.
And for those who don't know what Alan is talking about, the initially the pill cam, that was something, as he said, developed in Israel. What other inventions, you know, companies that may have started up in Israel that you know of that you think, well, people wouldn't realize, hey, you know, these started up in Israel here in America that people would be unfamiliar with?
Well, I think most of the developments of Intel, the various computer soft technology is developed in Israel. Interestingly enough, although Israel financially is could use some help because we spend so much money on defense, when it came to Intel, it encouraged it by allowing hundreds of millions of dollars by government grants to allow Intel to come to Israel, so we can allow a lot of our engineers, give them an opportunity to work for them, and both help Intel and help Israel. So, I mean, a lot of the various, you know, you should get into details. I mean, I'm not too familiar with it, but the latest other development that Intel has, the level of this most sophisticated one, all developed in Israel.
Well, now, as we get into our final couple questions here, I guess the one thing that people going to this website, listening to this interview, might be interested in knowing, I mean, what could American entrepreneurs learn from a person such as yourself, from Israeli men and women starting up new businesses that don't necessarily have those skills bred into them that we were talking about earlier?
First of all, I would not put the American young people and the industry entrepreneurship down. I think America has a lot to offer to the entire world. But I think if I pinpointed one part that the nation can do as such is to offer it to young people who show signs of various skills in technology or in any other areas, to, you know, to offer them maybe vocational schools and training in high school, you know, so when they come to the real world or to go to university, they sort of have the ability to know if they like it or not, and if they like it, you know, to go to university and improve those skills and really maybe push up also the level of education in these areas of electronics, of engineering, in the university level. And then, of course, this thing pushes up everything else, including then they come up to the market, and they have a lot more to offer, and pushes the industries right. I mean, that's how to teach courage. You cannot. I mean, this is something that you have to try to see if you have it or not, to assume responsibility. How to do that in American? I don't know. And again, as I said, there are now various There was the Peace Now. There was Teach for America. We sent kids, you know, 22 years old, 21 years old, to confront kids with, you know, challenges and sticking it out. And so it's not necessarily the teaching area, but just, you know, putting your character to test and seeing if you can do it. And all these things I think could help.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time today. I know that the people out there listening are going to be very interested, as I was, to hear about you know, the wealth of experience and knowledge you've accrued over the last many years.
Many years. the critical part is, and some of it was not circumstantial, that you confront it from a very young age, for better or for worse, and you learn to cope with it, you learn to assume responsibility to help others. So, you know, I don't, in some respects, I don't wish it to the Americans that they'll have to confront some of the challenges that I did in order to foster their personality. We'll have to do things in a more creative way here and not as physically challenging.
I understand. Well, hopefully, you know, they will do that, and we see that they're succeeding now, and the future is bright. So, you know, I thank you very much. And
my pleasure.